Afternoon. It is Wednesday, March 13. The time is 1:23 p.m. We'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Members present at this time, Representative Chris Tuck, Representative Sarah Hannon, Representative Dave Tellerico, Representative George Rauscher, Representative Sarah Rasmussen, Vice Chair, Representative Greyer Hopkins, Co-Chair, Representative John Lincoln, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. If we could please ask everyone to silence their cell phones as we get started, we'd appreciate that. Assisting us today is our recording secretary, Ms. Debbie Tillinghast, and our LIO moderator, Eric Heim-Bigner. Oh, yes, I was practicing that. All right. Okay, so today we have, just got a note, actually, so that'll change this. We have a couple things to do today. We have a couple confirmation hearings, and we have a presentation. It looks like one of the appointees is not online yet, so maybe we'll do the presentation first. And so we have William Schneibel, the dean of the UAF College of Engineering and Mines, who's going to be presenting to us. And, again, we had said in a previous meeting we wanted to kind of connect the dots about some of the workforce development and education resources that are happening with the state dollars and how that's important for resource development and management in Alaska. And so we're very excited to have your presentation today. And if I said your last name wrong, please forgive me and tell me how to say it properly.
Thank you very much. First of all, thank you for your service to the state, all of you. We appreciate it. And I appreciate the opportunity to get up and talk to you today. My name is Bill Schnabel. Rhymes with bobble.
All right.
I serve as the Dean of Engineering at UAF College of Engineering and Mines. And I'm here today to talk about some of the things that we do UA-wide, university-wide, with respect to resource development. We do a whole lot, but I'm going to focus on resource development today. First of all, resource development, especially with respect to engineering and engineering-related activities, is critical to the economic development of the state. I think that's a lot of people will agree with that. We've been doing engineering in the University of Alaska for 100 years, and as I kind of look around this room and see the oil and gas-related photos and mining-related photos, I think, gosh, we've been in that game for a long time. And we will continue to be in that game for a long time. Some of our things that we do at the university is, of course, we train students. So we develop the engineering and engineering-related workforce that Alaska needs. We do it at the bachelor's level and graduate level, as well as the occupational endorsement level, at the associate's level, all throughout the whole spectrum. I'll focus primarily on things that we've been doing at UAF and UAA College, at UAF College of Engineering and Mines, and UAA College of Engineering, primarily because that's what I'm most familiar with as the Dean of Engineering. So over the past 10 years, UAA and UAF combined engineering programs have graduated over 2,700 students. And roughly speaking, that's 270 per year of engineers or computer scientists. And I took a look at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development numbers. They had a 2016 10-year outlook that they had published. And they reported that over the years 2016 to 2026, the state of Alaska would need approximately 500 to 600 engineers or computer scientists or computer-related technicians per year. So we're graduating, the university system has graduated 270. The state needs 500 to 600 per year. So that's not even half. Mm-hmm. And although we love to keep our engineers in state after they graduate, not all of them stay. So what that means is that the University of Alaska is producing fewer than half of the people that we really need that are going to help drive the economy of the state. And that's important because the ones that we produce in Alaska are, frankly, the best engineers for the state of Alaska. And the reason for that is the way that we train them. at the University of Alaska, we give them the real full-on Alaska experience. They actually get out. Most of them were raised here. They actually get out into the environment. We take our students into Alaska. They understand permafrost. They understand remote conditions. They understand logistics. They understand specific things that you need to be successful as an engineer in the state of Alaska. And that's important. There's a lot of great engineering schools out there, but none of them will train their students in the way that we do, specific to Alaska problems. And not only do we train our students kind of, yes.
Pardon
yes.
me, Dr. Schnabel. So what we will try to do is just if anyone has questions at the end of a slide, so I don't interrupt you, but we did have a question from Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, and to wait till the end to go back to the beginning. it's just that you had referenced, thank you, through the chair, you had referenced that not all of our students stay here in Alaska, and a lot of them go outside once they get their degree. Conversely, is Alaska hiring a lot of students from outside to fill those slots, and is it because we can't provide them? Is that what you're saying, or is it because they need qualifications other than we can provide?
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, I don't know the specific numbers on how many engineers come from outside, but it's a fair share. And oftentimes, if it's a large international company or something like that, they'll come in through that way. I think it's more a question of we're not producing enough to fill all of the slots. Does that answer your question? There's more slots than there are people that we're producing.
And let me just say, for the record, that Representative Sponholz had joined us about 4 minutes ago at 1:26 p.m. And I just had a question, and pardon me if this isn't the great time to ask it, but just thinking about these overall numbers, the Fairbanks building remodel expansion, if I'm remembering correctly, that has been completed now. And I'm just wondering, in terms of capacity, because we have the new building now in Anchorage and Fairbanks, are we operating those at capacity in terms of the number of students enrolled in the programs, or is there some growth opportunity there if you had more professors, sort of, you know, that kind of thing?
Thank you for the question. There is space. There is opportunity. We have facilities capacity to bring on more students. The buildings are wonderful and we have the space to do it. To bring on more students, we'd probably need to bring on some more professors and things like that. But yes, with respect to facilities, both UAF and UAA are blessed with two brand new fabulous facilities.
Well, and I guess if you have any info on that, we're not sort of the right committee budget-wise, you know, that would go more towards the university. But if you have any info on that, it would be helpful for us to understand. And I think this is kind of the point for these presentations, is that, you know, even though we're looking at resource development, we need to be thinking, you know, where are we getting the workers to do these jobs? And, you know, is Alaska meeting the demand? It sounds like there's probably opportunity to have more Alaskans come through these programs. But, you know, what we probably don't know is, you know, what would it take to accomplish that? You know, is it that you need a couple more of these folks, you know, in the staffing, that kind of thing? If you have any information about that, I think it'd be great for us as well as the university folks.
Thank you. And I will, I'll get back to you with more information on the sorts of capacities with respect to people.
Thank you. That's really helpful. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. And it's more of a statement, and perhaps back to Representative Rauscher. I'm an alum from UAF, and I have a nephew who is a UAF engineering grad, who that extraordinary training provided him the opportunity to work for multinational Alaska. But then when they needed to look at somebody to do Arctic engineering in other parts of the world, taking that opportunity from fine engineering training with specialty knowledge, that not all of Russia as it's developed has had, and I think he did a stint working in Norway. And so I think we lose some of our highly trained specialist engineers to other places, only speaking to the fact how well our university trains specialty engineering for our ecosystems in the Arctic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Okay. So Alaska-specific challenges. We talked about why students are important, Alaskan students and Alaska training. But another thing that's pretty important is that we focus on challenges that are specific to Alaska. So, for example, if we look at the slide here, we have a picture from the 2015 Sag River flood up on the North Slope. You know, that flood shut down the Dalton Highway for 3 weeks. It was a huge deal. And that's because of our conditions up there in the Arctic. And the funny thing about this is that, you know, floods happen everywhere all the time. And people understand why they happen. But this flood, it wasn't so clear exactly why it happened. Some off-ice formed, some large chunks of ice formed and blocked the flow. But there was debate about why this happened. And that doesn't happen elsewhere. And the reason is because elsewhere people understand floods. But in Alaska, it's different. You need Alaska-specific expertise. And we have been working with DOT ever since then on this flood and ways to mitigate it. We've been working with Alyeska because they're very interested in the Sag River and what happened, how could that perhaps influence their pipeline? And we've been taking our students up there and learning how can we mitigate Alaska problems. So Alaska challenges and Alaska students are things that UA provides.
Representative Hopkins has a question.
Thank you.
Great to see a constituent come down and present on fun stuff. What are some of the other partnerships you've made with DOT, specifically in the infrastructure around Alaska, that the engineering department has worked closely with?
Thank you. Through the chair, some of them that crop to mind especially a few years ago, people were talking about building roads to the east and west up on the North Slope. So there was the road to Umiat. There's actually the one south of the range, the road to Ambler, and there were a few more. So those east and west roads are interesting because they cross a lot of rivers. Rivers generally run to the north and the south. And the most expensive thing about building a road is the bridges. And to build a bridge, you got to know how much water is coming down that river. And we don't know, because they're very remote rivers and nobody gauges them. And in most other places, people will go out and gauge rivers for 50 years and collect the data that way. But we don't have 50 years. People want to know what are the conditions now. So we have flown all over the place, north and south of the Brooks Range, trying to get an idea through measurement and modeling of how much water is going down those rivers. So that way we could get at least some specifications for building bridges, which is the most expensive part of road building. That's one of them. Done a lot of work on culverts, keeping how to design the best culvert for allowing salmon to pass through. Came out of UAF. Anyway, so there are many examples, but yeah, thank you. So I won't go all through the slide, but I do want to say that I'm again talking about the things I'm really familiar with, which is UAF and UAA engineering programs. But all over the university system, we are providing workforce development through the community and technical colleges at UAF, UAA, and through UAS. Statewide organization has a professional development aspect that is lending workforce development for the engineering fields. Anyway, I want to talk about a couple of programs specifically that we have. And one is the mining and geological engineering programs. We're providing workforce development. We are training our students specifically on Alaska issues. We have been a mining school since the very beginning, so for over 100 years. One of the great things about the mining program, for instance, is that we bring students, we have our own mine, and they're also working and doing projects at the commercial mines around the state. And so if a mine has an issue that they want to resolve, they can come to us at the university and say, hey, we've got some issues that we'd like you to work on. We can work in our laboratories to find solutions for them. And that way they don't have to do those studies in their own mining mills because they're operating and producing ore and things. We can do that in the laboratory, and we can use our students to do that. And one of the great things about doing that is that the students not only learn how to do research and learn some of the challenges associated with our mines in Alaska, but they then graduate and then go work for those very same mines, and it works out quite well. So, for example, the Red Dog mine, we've just started a couple of projects with Red Dog, and one of them is about using a biological process to treat mine water. So there is a tailings pond up there that has low pH, so it's acidic. It's got a lot of dissolved solids in it, a lot of dissolved metals. There's a treatment plant up there that treats this water before any discharge would happen. But it takes a lot to treat the water. And there are other ways that we could develop that could help Red Dog treat their water. So, for example, right now we're working on a study where we're working closely with Red Dog. We've gone out and sampled and collected some bacteria from the mine. And this bacteria takes sulfate, SO4-2, and transforms it to sulfide. Okay, so it reduces the sulfate. And what that does is, A, it helps to raise the pH, but it also will produce an ion that will help precipitate metals out of the water. So essentially, bacteria will help to treat the water. And this is done, you know, these sorts of processes are done all over the place, but they're generally pretty specific to the location. So we use bacteria from Red Dog. And it's an anaerobic process, so it's no oxygen. But the point of this is that we are doing the preliminary steps to develop a biological treatment process to help clean the tailings water. And that could be its own plant upstream of the pond. It could be with the treatment plant itself. So anyway, that's a three-year project. We're about 10 months in.
So when it precipitates the metals out, then is there some kind of like skimming mechanism? Is that how you would then get it out?
That would depend on how the process is engineered. Mm-hmm. So normally when those sorts of things would happen, there would be a sediment collection mm-hmm. basin or something like that. So that way when things precipitate, uh-huh. you can collect them.
Uh-huh. Oh, question from Representative Hopkins.
Thank you. One of my good friends was just down here at UAS. Talking to the careers in mining class. He's now opened up a business that works closely with the Ambler mining area and exploring for a number of those mines. Do UAF and UAA also have careers in mining classes? Do you know?
Through the chair, I'm not sure if they have a class that's named the careers in mining class, but I do know that through the community and technical colleges there are programs. And I'll talk about a couple of them later on.
I'll be more patient then. Thank you.
Thanks.
Please continue.
Thank you. Another study we're doing with Red Dog is increasing flotation yield. So in mining, in the processing plant, you get the ore, you crush it up, and the process of flotation is you get the ore, you crush it up, you mix it with water and maybe some amendments to form a slurry. You agitate the slurry, and it, some things float and some things don't. And that's how you help to separate what you're looking for in the ore versus the excess. So that is very dependent upon the chemistry of the ore. And as you kind of dig your way through a pit, that chemistry changes because, you know, the ore is a little bit different deep than up high. Or if you take or from a different pit and mix them together, the chemistry changes. And the flotation process is based upon chemistry. So Red Dog isn't that interested in doing a whole bunch of experiments with their mill. You know, they would much rather do that in the lab and figure out how to optimize the process. So because the chemistry is changing, they have come to us and said, hey, will you work some scenarios and try to figure out how to maximize, how to optimize flotation yield based upon the chemistry we're seeing now and what we expect to see in the future versus what we were seeing when we first developed the process.
Mm-hmm. Coach Lincoln.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it sounds like you guys are doing a lot to help Red Dog and on behalf of District 40 and the whole state, that a lot of that wealth gets shared with. Thank you. I'm curious if Red Dog is funding some of this. Are they supporting this financially somehow, or how is that relationship?
Yes, through the chair, they're funding all of it outright. This is for them. That work is going to go to a university somewhere because the university will have the labs and the students to do the experiments, and so they've decided to go through us.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Public-private partnership. I love it.
Public-private partnership.
Please continue.
Let's see. Maybe 5 years ago or so. The Alaska Miners Association identified some priority occupations that they would like to enhance. And so mill process operators, mechanics, underground miners were things that they were very interested in doing. So we submitted a proposal to the U.S. Department of Labor to work on workforce development projects as well as research and to combine the two. And came up with what's called the TACT grant. I can't remember what the what all the letters stand for, but it's a very long name. But in any event, the TACT grant was pretty cool because that was the first one we did with the Department of Labor. We had a mill process operators endorsement program, and I think there were 30 students that went through it. And those students were hired by, all of them were hired by mines in the state, 5 different mines hired students from the program because there's not a lot of mill process operator programs around. Some of the funding also went to underground and surface miner training programs. Another thing that we did with that TACT grant was developed what's called MERLSIM. And MERLSIM is a mining mill process simulator. So it's on your computer. And you can go to the MIRL website, Mineral Industries Research Lab website, and download this thing. And what it does is it allows trainees to go through and change the parameters in a mill, in a simulated mill that you set up, to see how changing those parameters might affect the output. And no one had done this before, had created a simulator like this. And it's getting used. It's free. It's free for people to use because it was developed on federal funds, and mines in the state are using it. Mines internationally are using it, and it's a pretty nice product that came out of that TACT grant. So, not only do we have the mining and geological programs, but we also have a petroleum engineering program. That is, I think there's about 65 students in it right now. We've been producing students that work for the industry in Alaska. They oftentimes will work for industry and then go out of state, go out of country for a while. They'll come back. But the ones that we produce here have Arctic engineering experience. Our alumni, many of them stay within the state and advise the legislature and become part of our economic ecosystem in the state. In petroleum engineering, as well as all of the engineering programs at UAF, and this is all probably true for UAA too, undergraduate students finish off their programs with a capstone design project. Which is cool because many of those capstone design projects are very state specific. They are solving problems in rural Alaska or for industry or for whatever. So for instance, one of the capstone design projects in petroleum engineering this year is students working with the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation to develop a virtual data room. And the virtual data room is basically taking all of the information about North Slope gas resources and putting them in one place. So that way, if potential investors into a gas line wanted to evaluate what are the resources available on Alaska's North Slope, they can go to this virtual data room and pull those data, make those evaluations. And so that product is coming soon.
Really good.
We also work very, very closely with industry. And so, for example, a few years ago, we started working with Hillcorp, looking at, with a relatively small study on core flooding. So we're flooding cores and figuring out what's the best way of getting oil out of the ground. One of our professors was doing this, and the results were positive. And so then we began talking with Hillcorp a little bit more about, well, what can we do with this information? And so last year, we sent a proposal to the Department of Energy, National Energy Technology Lab, to look at using polymer flood to get at heavier oil. And so specifically, Hillcorp, together with UAF, wrote a proposal to DOE to start doing some studies up at Milne Point. And specifically, can we inject polymers into that formation and help to bring out some of the oil that's a little bit more viscous. That project is $9.6 million. Much of it is for the actual operations of this injection. This is in our first year of a four-year study, and results are fairly promising. That's good because a lot of the oil that's left up on the slope is heavy or viscous. And so new ways of getting that oil out of the ground, for the state of Alaska, coming up with those new ways of getting the oil out of the ground is really, really important. So again, that study is underway now. The results are looking promising. And in fact, they're looking so promising that we are working with Hillcorp on another proposal, a follow-on proposal. So we look at the slide up there. We've got on the left side, we've got light oil, the easy stuff to get out, stuff we've gotten a lot of that out of the ground. The viscous oil, more like syrup, which is a little bit heavier, a little bit harder to get out, and then the heavy oil on the right-hand side. And the heavy oil is the really tough stuff to get out. The polymer flood study that I told you about is really kind of looking at the stuff in the middle, the viscous oil, and by adding polymer to injection fluids, injection water, we make the water more viscous, so it's able to kind of force that oil out of the ground more readily. But if we look over to the right-hand side, to the Ugnew formation, that super heavy oil, even polymers, even more viscous water isn't going to work because that stuff is just too thick. But there's also another method called solvent injection. And what solvent injection does is it makes oil less viscous. So our proposal now is to do a technique that we're developing whereby we add the polymer to make the water more viscous and we add the solvent to make the oil less viscous. Mm-hmm. And by combining those two and one after the other, we think we're going to be able to get oil, get to the heavy oil. So anyway, long story short, we're working closely with Hillcorp on developing this proposal. The DOE has just invited us to submit a full proposal. I guess I will point out, this is a good place to point out. So this proposal we think is pretty important for us, but I've been hearing a lot of talk about what do we do as the university with state funds. Writing proposals like this is what we do with state funds. The Department of Energy will never pay us to write a proposal. But it takes a lot of work to do. So coming up with something like this, yes, that's how we're investing the funds that the state is giving to us.
Question from Representative Sponholz.
Thank you, Co-Chair Tarr. I have a question about this technology that you're describing using the solvent injection. Is this used in other places?
Thank you. Through the chair, yes and no. And I'm kind of just learning about it myself as well. So the solvent injection is used. So using solvent injection and then alternating that between water flooding is used. But the polymer, adding that to the solvent injection and then is not. So that's a new technology.
It'd be an innovation then?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And then is this the kind of technology then that the individuals who develop it have access to, like, patenting this new technology? Does that work, or how does that work when you do something like this in partnership with the DOE and a private company?
Thank you. That's a great question, because for us it's important to patent technologies that we develop. I do not know the specifics on this one.
Okay.
And if we're working with industry and they're part of it, they would want to be, so we would probably in partnership with industry patent it or something like that. But everyone is different.
Great. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you mentioned that you use state funds to write proposals, do you have kind of a breakdown of what the cost is on proposals, or how much of the budget from the state goes towards proposals specifically?
Thank you. And again, through the chair, I could probably come up with that and send the information specifically about in my college, how much went to proposals. Yeah. But that's not something I could come up with off the top of my head.
Thank you.
If you want to send that along, we can share that with all the members of the committee.
Will do.
Taking note. Okay. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, I was going to hold my question, but since Representative Rasmussen opened the door, have you had the opportunity to look at the proposed budget for the university and start to digest what the impacts on those budgets would mean for your school and programming?
Thank you. Through the chair, I certainly have looked at the budgets for the university and thought about worst-case scenarios. And, of course, worst-case scenarios are devastating. What I don't know is, you know, whatever cuts may be given to the university is how that would be distributed throughout the university. And I hesitate to speculate on it simply because, for me, I think to start talking about what could happen to specific programs, especially in my own, that then people start to think, gosh, is that a stable program? And our program is stable, and I don't want anybody to think anything different.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I guess it was more of, you know, the cost analysis of what's state money helps you write proposals that benefit industry, that gives some partial funding, but each segment of the industry might be interested in one project, but you're looking at long-term projects and development that hopefully help not just Hillcorp, but long-term development and being able to reinforce that. Some budget analysts look at it and say, you know, we need to see the cost benefit for each dollar we gave you. Did it turn around $10? And much of the work I hear you talking about is, we gave you $10 and we were able to make $1,000 now, but it might make us $1 million over its lifespan. And I'd like to, you know, not just what those state dollars are being spent on, but maybe the optimistic view instead of the negative view of what could you do and where do you see the programs growing?
Thank you. Through the chair, I guess I can say this. Last year in 2018, in our research unit, we had $1.5 million in state dollars. And then we brought in another $1.5 million through what's called ICR, or overhead costs, based upon external grants, and then about approximately $11 million in external grants. So for me, it seemed like an awfully good deal for the state. What I can't answer, though, was of that $1.5 million, specifically how much went to proposals, because there's grant management and a lot of other things that go into that funding that aren't specifically proposals, but that we have to do business, and that external grants won't pay for.
Okay. So we have, it looks like we have three or four more slides, so probably that'll take us maybe 10, 15 minutes. And so I just wanted to make that announcement for the two individuals online for the confirmation hearings. Let's say by 2:15 that we would be wrapped up, and we'll move into the confirmation hearings.
Great. Thank you. You're welcome. Anyway, so we're really excited about this particular project. We are have just formed what's called the Energy Research Consortium of Alaska, and so that's with the recognition that there are energy companies throughout Alaska that have common problems. And wouldn't it be great if we could give them one place where they could go to answer questions that they almost certainly all have? And we've so far had three meetings with the IRCA, is what we call it. During those three meetings, we came up with different things that they might like for us to do, different scopes of work. I think I have them written down here. So the themes that IRCA was interested in having the university develop were coastal and offshore issues, or changing permafrost and oil production, and subsurface imaging. So the industry has agreed, gosh, these are things that we could work together on and ask the university about, and we wouldn't mind sharing the results. And so in the last meeting, they kind of decided, well, let's look at just one of these issues for right now and see what develops. And the one that they've chosen is to look at permafrost science and engineering. And specifically, how do we deal with the intersections between, say, gravel roads and gravel pads and permafrost, both kind of well subsidence issues, as well as how do you remove the gravel pads and gravel roads safely when you're done? Because if you just dig up all of the gravel and remove it, well, then you've got a large pond in the ground, and do we want that? And so we're working with IRCA right now to come up with a scope of work to figure out how can we model the best way of dealing with gravel pads and gravel roads going forward. Another prospective study we're working on is looking at syngas. So if you look at the chart here, the turbine on the bottom is one way to produce energy. So we have a turbine in Fairbanks that is producing energy using naphtha. It's great. They're very efficient. So if you look at the red line on the graph, they're very efficient at high speeds, but they're not very efficient when they're at low speeds. And there's also a wind farm, Eva Creek, that we are trying to use that turbine to balance the load from the wind farm. Well, when the wind is blowing a lot, you don't need very much energy from the turbine. Okay, so you turn the turbine way down, it doesn't run very efficiently, and it breaks the turbine. Anyway, what really works well is a reciprocating engine. You can use a generator that works well at low speeds. Okay, so we've got that. We also have Yusubeli coal mine, so we've got this great source of coal. And there's also a technology called syngas. So you can make syngas out of coal. Okay, so we have all these things floating around. We're doing a feed study right now whereby we would put a syngas module at the UAF using coal from Yusubeli, make the syngas, use the syngas to run this reciprocating generator, which we already have on site, use that to meter the wind coming from Eva Creek. Better for everyone all around, and because it works more efficiently, it helps with the particulate emissions. So there's a lot there, and there's a lot to kind of know and understand. But the point of showing you this slide is that we're not just thinking about today. We're thinking about way out here in the future. How can we do things more efficiently? This study is a FEED study, front-end engineering and design. So right now we're trying to figure out, will it work? We're not sure yet whether or not we're going to do it. We'll know that at the end of the FEED study. But keeping an eye on what are our resources available, what's our industry that we have in the state, and how can we kind of use all of those things to think out into the future, that's what the university does. That's what engineers do. And we're pretty excited about that.
Question from Vice Chair Lincoln?
Yes.
So syngas is synthetic gas?
Yes, through the chair. It is synthetic gas made from coal.
Okay. And the engine that you're running with that, did that have to be converted from in some way, or what was the fuel source for it?
Yes, it was a diesel generator. And it's not too much of a shift to go from a diesel generator to a gas generator. And so we have this large diesel generator on campus from an old project that we would be perfect for this. The syngas technology right now is very efficient at the gigawatt scale, really large systems. We're talking about doing it at the megawatt scale for our needs. So that scaling down will take some engineering, and we're not sure how efficient it will be. So there is some research to get there. I don't have that. Yes. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I look forward to learning more about that.
Thank you. Second to last slide, and I'll be cognizant of the time.
No, we're doing good.
Perfect.
Yep.
Also, I wanted to do we think of the UA system with UAA, UAF, and UAS, but also the statewide administration does training. So they run the mining and petroleum training service, for instance. So we have not only the different individual units, but we also have the statewide system that is providing workforce development. I guess I can say to kind of to end up, I wish that I had more time because we've done. I was thinking this morning, we did a project a few years ago called Herder Burner, and Herder Burner was taking a chemical herder, and so you get an oil spill, right? Oil goes all over the place. It gets too thin to burn, okay, because it spreads out. Well, you can take a herding agent, and spray it around the perimeter of that oil spill. Okay, what it does is it keeps it from spreading. So it makes it small area, makes it thick enough to burn, okay, which is pretty cool because then you don't have to use booms, right? And in-situ burning is very, very efficient. Now, what we did was working with a joint industry program funded by industry is figure out a way to apply herders from the air and then take helicopters and essentially shoot napalm onto these oil slicks and burn them. And that had never been done before, aerial application of a herder as well as the ignition. And we did that at UAF. Nowhere in the world has this been shown. And the reason they did it at UAF is because if we are going to be exploring and producing offshore assets, and we get an oil spill up there, we need ways to clean it up. And so this aerial application of the herder and the in-situ burning would work really, really well in the Arctic. And in fact, our study was broken ice. So anyway, all that to say is that kind of the can-do spirit and the living in Alaska and understanding the Alaskan issues, that's what we're about at the University of Alaska. That's why, in my opinion, it's so important that we support the university and what we're doing there. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Schnabel. I think I got it right. I hope I got it right. Is that right? That was an excellent presentation, and it's great to see somebody who's so passionate and optimistic and enthusiastic about the work that you're doing. And I feel like, you know, really helpful to help us make the connections about what we need to, you know, address workforce issues in Alaska and how you're helping to meet that. So I just want to express my appreciation. I don't know if there are any other comments or questions from committee members. Representative Hopkins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. And thank you, Dr. Stombel, too. That was very interesting and fun. I enjoy nerding out on those things as well. There was a Talk of Alaska podcast a number of months ago that was talking about the oil renaissance on the North Slope and all the new fields that are coming online and around the country. And it was an hour and a half long, and all they were talking about was the advances in technology being the real source of that boom on the North Slope and opening up new fields, new developments, and clearly this is one of the places that's happening at a pace that we don't see anywhere else in the world. And so thank you very much for coming and talking to us, and hopefully in the Energy Committee we could have a presentation on this and more specific programs that are happening up there. I'd very much enjoy hearing that, and I know some of the other members on that committee would be as well. So thank you very much, and we'll be in touch with you to follow up on this.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you.
Yes, I think we have a couple other questions before you wrap up here. Representative Hannon and then Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you. And not trying to be disparaging, but I just wanted to make sure that whoever the young student was who came up with the idea of shooting napalm from the air to get the herder burner going was able to go back there to their parental units and prove that their time spending bottle rocket energy was well spent. And they now are going to have an idea that solves oil spills in the Arctic. And mom said I was going to burn the house down from climbing trees and shooting bottle rockets. But that, you know, the physics of work.
Thank you. And through the chair, I will send you the video. I'll be happy to send
yes,
the committee
right. video. Of course, they videoed it.
It is on video, and I will make sure to send that.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to touch back really quick on the resource industry training programs and find out you might not have the answer off the top of your head, but what the budget for that program kind of looks like, because I do think that one thing we really need to emphasize in Alaska is more skilled training. Mm-hmm. We have such a high demand for that, and that's definitely an area I would like to see a focus on. So,
Through the chair, and those numbers I'll have to get. I don't know what they are, but I wholeheartedly agree that workforce training at all levels is really important.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Representative Sponholz.
Thank you, Co-Chair Tarr. I just want to give you a shout-out accommodation for doing a great job illustrating the value of the university as it relates to workforce development for our natural resource industries. And I'll just sort of put an aside on this that, you know, in addition to the work that engineering does in oil and mining, it also does really great work in civil engineering and in buildings and making sure that our, you know, our roads and buildings and other kinds of technology throughout the state are functioning really well. But I think you did a fantastic job of putting the university's best foot forward today and showing how it contributes to our economy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the research into the syngas from the coal. There's certainly a lot of coal in my district, but it's scattered all over the state. I think we have 17% of the world's actual coal supply here in the state. So our future there, and particularly in some of our remote locations, I think about Nulato. I believe there's a major, major coal deposit down off of the Yukon River in Nulato even up by Deering and some of those places, you know, people find coal all the time. And the cost of fuel and the ability to move it almost puts people in dangerous situations some particular years in those particular areas. And if we ever got that developed, they'll be on diesel generation for a while, but if we can convert that and make it cleaner and more efficient, that would be a phenomenal development, I think, for quite a few areas in the state of Alaska, so I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and through the chair, I actually took a, I had a slide in there before, and I actually took it out because, as I mentioned, gigawatt scale, the syngas, it works. Megawatt scale, kind of at UAF campus, we'll see how it works. We'll try to make this work. There are coal deposits all over the state of Alaska, and a number of communities would be served by this if it worked. That's at the kilowatt scale. So that's kind of two orders of magnitude away. But, I mean, one of the reasons we're doing this study is not only for efficiencies in air quality in Fairbanks, but if we can prove it at the megawatt scale, that can provide a jumping off point to get it to work at the kilowatt scale. Mm-hmm. And then if those units could be mass produced elsewhere, skid it out to the communities, that is a solution. Mm-hmm. But we're a couple steps away from that, so I don't talk too much about it yet.
More bottle rockets.
Yeah, right. Well, again, thank you so much. The three items I heard were a request for a breakdown on the grants administration, a request for numbers on the Alaskans participating in the training programs, and then the napalm video for all of us to enjoy, right? So, again, thank you for your good work, and thank you for your enthusiasm and for your presentation today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to continue on because we have these couple of appointments to consider this afternoon. The two individuals before us are for the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council. A description: the board consists of 6 members, 5 appointed by the governor from 5 specific districts listed in statute, and the commissioner of the Department of Labor or the commissioner's designee who serves as chair. Their function: the council consults with the commissioner or designee regarding negative decisions on appeals filed in relation to care of sick and disabled fishermen, advises the department on administration of the fund. They meet 2 times per year for 10 days maximum. So we have 2 individuals who are going to come before us. One is Marilyn Charles from Imonic, and this is for District 5 as it's outlined in statute. And then the second individual is Moses Toyakuk from District 4. And so we have both of those online. I think I'll go to Marilyn Charles first. And since they're both for the same organization, for the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council, have both appointees do their introductions. We'll do some questions from committee and then open it up for public testimony. So, Ms. Charles, if you could please go ahead and introduce yourselves to us.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Marilyn Charles. I'm from Imonic. I grew up in Imonic until I went to Mount Edgecombe and graduated at Mount Edgecombe. Right after Mount Edgecombe, I did an internship over in Washington, D.C., over at Senator Frank Murkowski's office. After that, I attended the University of Alaska Fairbanks for 4 years. And in between, I started working at QuickPack Fisheries. Through QuickPack Fisheries, I worked my way up from being a spooner, where I was cleaning guts out of fish, to being the government affairs compliance officer. Through that position, I ended up being introduced to insurance, doing workman's comp insurance and P&I insurance, and I have a really good relationship with both insurance carriers that we have. The reason why I'm interested in this position is because I found that is my passion, and I love to help my community. In Imonic, all our fishermen, it's centralized. All the fishermen go there because the fish buying company, QuickPack, is there, right there in Imonic. And I currently work at Yukon River Towing, a construction company, and I still do claims for workman's comp and P&I. And so I've never heard of this particular program where fishermen can use this as insurance for them, and because I'm right there in midst of the fisheries season, I'm right next door to all the fishermen, so I could pass on this information. I could help them through the process, and I know a lot of fishermen that could use this program, but they don't know about it. But now that I've been introduced to this group, I feel like I could spread the word to my local fishermen out on the Lower Yukon. So that's why I'm interested in this position.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your introduction, and let's just see if we have any questions from committee members. No questions? Okay. Well, if you wouldn't mind just staying online in case any questions come up, then we will go to our second appointee. Thank you for your willingness to serve and for being available for this interview today. We have then, we'll go to Moses Toyakuk, and apologies, there's two different spellings I'm looking at, so if I got the name wrong, my apologies. If you could please state your name for the record and do your introduction, the same kind of thing. We'd love to get to know you a little better and why you're interested in this position, and then we'll take questions from committee members.
Okay, Moses Toyakuk, senior from Manakota, Alaska. And I've been living here all my life, and I speak my language fluently, and I went to high school down in Monash from 68, 69, and went to Victory High for 70, and transferred to Dillingham, where I graduated in 1973. Had some college, and after some college, I went to work on the pipeline at Valdez, trained at Sitka, or Seward, to be a welder. And then after that, came home, started fishing again with my parents, and started fishing by myself back in 1971. And been a fisherman since I was small. Went to school for electrician. Been working at the power plant here in Manakota last 40-some years. 42 to be exact, and I've been a pilot too for Manakotic Air. We sold that Manakotic Air to one of the chief pilots, and he renamed it to North Lighting. It's located in Dillingham. And I commercial pilot for about 15 years, and got my multi-engine rating. And currently, I sit on quite a few committees on the city council side, village council side, BBNC, BBNA, or BBDC, and go to fishery-related meetings. Just got done with our board game last month, and then today we had the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association meeting. Just got done about 15, 20 minutes ago. And here I am. I'm interested because I'm a fisherman. I'm new to this. I'm willing to learn and help my community members, also fellow fishermen out here in Nusigak Bay. And interested in how things work. And I don't really know how this process is going to work, but my one of my relatives here, he was on the same seat, I think. Mr. Barkman, Larry Barkman. he's here, and he used to sit on the same committee, and I'm interested. So, I can answer questions if there's any.
Thank you very much for your introduction. Really appreciate it and sharing all of your history and long time in public service. Just want to make note that you served as the mayor of your community for 26 years.
Yes.
So thank you for that. Are there any questions from committee members? Okay, it doesn't seem like we have any questions. So we also have another appointee, Marilyn Charles, so I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony for both individuals. I don't see anyone online wishing to testify for these individuals. Is there anyone here in the room with us? Okay, I'm not seeing anyone here in the room, so we will go ahead and close public testimony. So thank you, Ms. Charles and Mr. Toyakuk. At this time, I will entertain a motion. Mr. Vice Chair?
Yes, the Resource Committee has reviewed the qualifications for the governor's appointees to the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council, Marilyn Charles and Moses Toyakuk, and recommends that the names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect the intent by any members to vote for or against this individual, either of them, during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you very much. So that we would love to have you sign the paperwork before you leave. And just want to make an announcement about what is happening in committee on Friday. This one might be a little more action-packed. Because it will be our confirmation hearing for Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Designee Jason Bruni. So we'll have both the introduction and the public testimony and everything at Friday's meeting. Any other business to come before the committee today? Okay. Well, seeing none, we will adjourn today at 2:24 p.m. Thank you.